Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Love for St. Louis from outside the region gets folks around town excited. And when it's a St. Louisan receiving recognition for work being done in St. Louis, both with and for St. Louisans, that elation is accompanied by a palpable pride. Dara Eskridge knows this firsthand as a native of University City and the CEO of the nonprofit Invest STL. She joins us now to talk about it. Dara, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Dara, what is your favorite flower?
Oh, calla lily.
So a bunch of calla lilies, a bunch of them, because last month, Time magazine released its list of 100 of the world's most influential rising stars. And Dara, you are one of that 100, and that's made St. Louis very proud. So congratulations on the recognition.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What was your initial reaction when you were approached by Time?
A shock. We received just kind of like a very out of the blue message from them a couple of months ago, generally just inquiring about work happening. And so I didn't think much of it. And then an email came like a few months later and said, hey, you're being honored in this way. And I was sitting in my office and had two of my team members around me, and I was stunned and didn't know what to say. And then a few days later, when it was published, when I saw the write-up and who wrote it, I was in my kitchen with my son getting he and my daughter ready for school, and I actually screamed. Which, you know, scared the daylight out of my son until he understood what it was. So.
And what did your son have to say?
Honestly, it was his teacher that helped him understand what it was. And then, so when he came home from school, he was very proud and gave me a big hug. And he said, okay, I understand why you screamed now.
Okay. So world's most influential rising star, that is quite a title. And you just mentioned Jason Tatum. He wrote the description as to why you deserved this recognition. And the first line reads, St. Louis is a special place because of leaders like Dara Eskridge. When Time magazine and other folks call you, you know, influential rising star, what does that mean to you?
Oh. There are a lot of things that run through my head. One, it's like, what? Wait, me? I'm just a kid from U City. But then I immediately start thinking about all of the incredible people that I get to do this work with and think, well, okay, what about this person and that person? Why aren't they being named to it? So I start to just absorb it as really, I'm just the representative for the work right now.
Mm-hmm. And right now is important because?
What do you mean, Elaine?
Is there something about this moment and this recognition that feels, you know, significant in a particular way?
I mean, you know, there's a lot that is happening globally across the country, and particularly here in St. Louis, where we have seen a lot of our collective work come into view a little bit sharper and being very relevant for the moment, especially what, you know, has been experienced over the summer post natural disaster. So I think there's a lot of attention here. And so it really is a privilege and an honor to be able to like I said, receive this honor on behalf of the collective work. Mm-hmm. And I'm very clear, right? It's not just me. There are 17 people in my organization. I have 8 board members, and I have so many partners that would take the entire time that we have to talk to, you know, to list. And I am grateful for all of them and their efforts and their partnership.
Mm-hmm. You said that you thought, I'm just a kid from U City. And the work that you've done, you know, your mission to make St. Louis better, that's been part of your life for a very long time. I recall a post by Humans of St. Louis that was presented by Forward Through Ferguson. And there you shared about how your parents influenced how you view community building and urban planning, which is what you studied in college. What are some of the early lessons that you learned from your parents that have been particularly relevant?
I used to, when I was earlier in my career, I would shy away from talking about the things that I've learned from my parents because it feels like, you know, when you're so early in your career, you're trying to make a name and say, I'm an adult, I'm a professional, right? And referencing the parents maybe doesn't fit with that. But the older I get, the more experience I get, I am happy to point a line to how much I've actually gathered from them. So there's not much that I've learned and that I do that isn't informed by what they exposed me to. My father was a serial entrepreneur. He started off in investment banking in New York. And, you know, so a lot of my interest and acumen around markets and how they operate comes from conversations with him. But then when that kind of corporate environment just no longer worked for him, who was a Black man, you know, in the 70s and 80s, he went into entrepreneurship and had a series of businesses, including a family restaurant that we operated. And so I got to see what does it mean to work together as a family unit, as a team, to earn for the family? What does it mean to be hospitable to people? What does it mean to offer an amenity that might not be present in a neighborhood? And then he went into real estate, which is where he spent the bulk of my life. And that, of course, has a very direct line to my work. So sitting in his passenger seat, I had the privilege of being able to be exposed to so much of St. Louis. I mean, I can literally drive around St. Louis and really be struck by memories because there's something in the environment that feels so familiar because I have crossed that intersection multiple times, right? And I can be transported back to that moment when my dad was talking to me about a property here or the conditions around the corner. So he, you know, that his work really inspired my interest in what creates places, what creates the conditions in places, why do places look differently, why do people associate differently to certain places. And then from my mother, who had a long career in public service, I learned a lot about just like how large systems move or don't move. Mm. What are the small p politics that are required to negotiate and pull people along? And really from her, the importance of a very quiet power, right? I don't talk a ton. I mostly just sit silently and observe. And I learned that from her. There's a lot of power in just watching before speaking.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, the influence of your parents has been huge. So going into urban planning then, was that an outcome of what you saw? And in particular, thinking about the work that's done to design, you know, cities physically, socially, economically, and what you're doing now, those things together, how have they affected the way that you approach your work here? And maybe things that people have gotten wrong over time.
So I actually started off in architecture because when I realized I wanted to be in a position to shape how places operate and what they look like, for me, I thought that meant I had to be the one physically designing the space. And it was through undergrad where I discovered urban planning and understanding, like, I really enjoy all of the decisions that occur before a line is put onto a paper, right, and a building is drawn. I love the policy side of things. I love the practice making side of things. And so really you know, I think sometimes it's forgotten that actually I have this background in architecture. And I like to bring that into the work today because I'm balancing how am I making people feel in being in community? How am I thinking about the spaces that they're negotiating? Plus, what are all of these legacies of policies that have restricted people's opportunities and their ability to thrive? And so merging up these disciplines in this very specific context of St. Louis, where both physical design choices and policies and practices have been very persistent in excluding particularly Black communities from being able to advance.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned riding with your father as a child, looking at neighborhood conditions. Is there maybe a part of the city that you remember looking at then and that you look at now and it kind of illustrates what you've been talking about?
Yeah, there are a lot of places. There's a stretch of road that I have spent a lot of time going up and down throughout my life. Skinker as it moves from the Del Mar Loop and goes north and transforms into Keeneland Avenue, going into Wellston and Hillsdale. When I was a kid, right on Skinker, just before you came up to Del Mar, there was a little secondhand shop on the west side of Skinker. And there was an older gentleman in there that my father used to love to talk to. And there was a little handmade wooden dollhouse that I was just obsessed with. So I thought every time we went there, like, this is going to be my chance to get it. But that building doesn't stand there anymore. That shop has been wiped away, I don't know, maybe about 15, 20 years by now. And it was replaced by, you know, all of this new development that happened at that intersection. On the other end of that corridor is where my grandmother's house was, still is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a very modest little bungalow on a hill. But also I remember with time, a junkyard popped up next door, then one across the street, and then one on the other side of her. Tall grass immediately in the lot next to her, growing, never getting cut. And therefore, you've got mosquitoes and all these things that are putting my grandmother at risk. And then a block down the street where, you know, I went to church as a little girl, the school that was across the street eventually gets leveled. And then eventually, Wellston's totally without a school district, right? I think these two instances just along that corridor are very reminiscent of what has happened here in St. Louis with Black communities, where there is something that is built, there is a norm that is built, and it gets crushed and erased, either to make way for something new, and typically for a different population of people, or is just allowed to deteriorate regardless of the life that is sitting in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. And this all after years and years of disinvestment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a good spot for us to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue our conversation with Dara Eskridge. She's a St. Louis native, the CEO of Invest STL, and one of Time Magazine's 100 World's Most Influential Rising Stars. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with St. Louis native Dara Eskridge. She's the CEO of the nonprofit Invest STL and one of Time Magazine's 100 World's Most Influential Rising Stars. Dara, before the break, you were describing this stretch of Skinker when it turns into Keeneland, what you remember of that that stretch as a child, what it looks like now, and about disinvestment. But the organization that you are leading is called Invest STL and got its start in 2012 and then moved to a sponsored program under St. Louis Community Foundation in 2015. and then it became independent in 2022. In the 3 years since that independence, InvestSTL has developed several programs that empower residents. Can you talk with us about what that empowerment has been and what community members have been able to accomplish?
So some of the key things over these last 3 years, one, setting a foundation for understanding that there is a neighborhood operating system that is critical to help neighborhoods thrive. And that includes, yes, staffed organizations like community development corporations, but also resident-led organizations like neighborhood associations and block units. And so, you know, we've had the honor of being able to partner with several of these kind of systems, these units, to really lift that as like these are essential components for healthy, thriving neighborhoods. And at the core of it are residents. I think that has probably been our biggest stride over these last 3 years is really elevating neighborhoods in our region. They are able to tick because there are people who wake up every day and care about the experiences that they and their neighbors are having, and that they see the importance of organizing and setting an agenda for their place. And they believe very deeply that they deserve to be in the driver's seat for the place that they live in. Mm-hmm. And so it's been wonderful for us to be able to invest in that kind of power and see residents get to deepen their relationships with each other and dream about their places and what they can make happen there.
Mm-hmm. I think there's sort of a funny thing with the term residence, because I think of people, but in order to be a resident, there has to be something that you are residing in. Mm-hmm. So in giving cash to residents, which is one of the programs at InvestSTL, what have you all been able to achieve? What has developed out of that?
Yeah, so there's one very large program that has been a very substantial investment in residents. And then there is a smaller one. And I think it's important to talk about both.
Yes.
So one is a Small Dollars Action Fund, which our systems team leads. And that is, you know, up to $2,000 three times a year to resident-based collectives, neighborhood associations, block units, and the like, as resources to support them in just coming together as neighbors, to addressing some of the low-hanging fruit but critical issues that they see. So what we've seen is, at this point, over, you know, 2.5 years of operating this, you know, several hundred resident collectives who have beautified spots in their neighborhood, planted things, put in signs that establish themselves as block units. I love seeing it even in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, producing material like banners and things of the like that just help set an identity for the neighborhood, but also tending to each other when people are homebound. And so creating systems and services for that. And so that's been one critical stream of using cash to support just neighborhood building. But then on the larger scale, we're looking at Rooted, which is led by our policy team, and that's focused in the West End and Visitation Park neighborhoods. It is, as best we know, up until very recently, when now another community is replicating it, it is a first-time exploration of direct cash investment as an anti-displacement strategy. Mm-hmm. And so these neighborhoods are, you know, have some time been kind of neighborhoods that investors have gotten a lot of interest in within the last 10 years. And so you've seen a lot of property being bought up and longtime residents recognizing that there's something happening here, right? And that naturally starts to stoke some questions around, is this a place that's still going to be for me for a long time? And so what we did was, by lottery, identified 50 households who had been in the neighborhood since 2016 or prior, and offered an investment of $22,000 to those households, where they can look to either put it in their own property, help fixing it up, they could purchase property, they could start or expand a business in the neighborhood, and or they could put it into an investment account. And what we've seen is that largely the families that are participating in Rooted have been able to invest further into their relationships and their physical connections within that neighborhood, while also starting to increase their own wealth within the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we get to this point because it's one that has interested me ever since I learned about Invest STL. We talked about how it has developed over time, but one of the things that is set in place is a sunset for this organization. Another unique quality of Invest STL is this 20-year theory of change, and to wit, the organization's final day in operation is already in place, and that's December 31st, 2042. Why?
There are a few reasons here. It's no secret that St. Louis has a lot of nonprofits. I mean, we have just an enormous number of nonprofits. And so there is one intention around, we don't want to necessarily add to that volume. It's not that St. Louis needs more nonprofits to get critical work done. It's just that we need a more better aligned and better practiced system to get critical work done. And so part of our work is helping to facilitate some of that alignment. Another piece of it is that just in my experiences of being in nonprofits, working with nonprofits, I've seen how easy it has been for some nonprofits to really kind of, you know, go astray from their purpose because of, you know, funding constraints or opportunities, or because there's just not real clear understanding of what is the purpose. And so they shapeshift. When we shapeshift, we never achieve, you know, what we're trying to achieve. And so we decided to set a sunset for ourselves to say, look, we've got really important work that we want to hyper-focus on. And if we can't get it done in a generation's time, we're probably not the right mix of people mm-hmm. and strategies to get it done. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we should move aside.
So with what has happened around the May 16th tornado, has that changed your work or the priorities? What effect has that had?
That's such a great question. The other reason for a sunset is that it gives appropriate urgency and clarity to the work. And so with the tornado, it confirms for us that the work, the mission that we adopted in 2022 is so important. Right? This focus on legacy Black neighborhoods and facilitating investment to them is critical, and that can't change. And while I can see there might be some temptation for some to say, well, you know, you might need to stick around longer because this is a long recovery process. For us, again, it's about appropriate urgency. It says, well, we have, you know, 17 years left, and we're going to stick to that, which means that we need to be prepared to take very big swings in these next couple of years to support not just recovery and recovery and development in these neighborhoods, but long-term resiliency within these neighborhoods. And so we have to be willing to be bold and take big risks. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't change the time frame. What we do have questions around is, does it change the kind of hyperlocal nature of our investments, right? There's a whole universe of places that we might conceivably invest in. The question on the table for us is, do we continue with that universe, or do we just say these neighborhoods in North City that were in the direct path of the tornado, are these the neighborhoods that we commit to investing in for the remainder of our 17 years? Mm-hmm. So that's really where the question lies, not in the time frame.
Mm-hmm. And in 30 seconds, Tara, what is most exciting about this recognition you've gotten from time, not for yourself, but for the we that you described who received the message that time wanted to do something about you?
I'd say that we don't have the we, right? We don't have the big corporate flair and the huge platforms. And so this kind of recognition says, the work on the ground matters. The voices on the ground matter. And that's huge for us.
Dara Eskridge is the CEO of the nonprofit Invest STL and one of Time Magazine's 100 World's Most Influential Rising Stars. Dara, thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.